All right, Tom, tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive before we take a quick break and get back and and start talking.
Oh, cool. Yeah, consumerguide.com. That's where all our new car and used car reviews live. If you want to have some fun with car news or just old car culture, check us out at our blog. That's the CG Daily Drive blog.
There you go. And you will answer any and all car-related questions. People are interested in getting a car or have questions about automobiles and all that stuff. 312-981-7200. Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, there's Tom Appel. We'll take a break, and then we'll get into all things automotive. Oh, yeah. Yeah, all right. Hey, good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude. We're here till 5 a.m., and it is Tuesday. Two for Tuesday, one artist, two songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. That's coming up a little bit later on. We're going to talk about odd quirks and habits that humans have, and also another edition of Celebrity Name Game. But now, Tom Appel is with us, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He makes his monthly visit with us, and we're talking all things car-related and auto-related and answering any and all of your car questions. 312-981-7200, and you can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we welcome Tom back to the show. Hey, Tom.
Hey.
All right. Let's talk about this, the car that they're calling Godzilla.
Godzilla, yeah.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about this thing.
Yeah, Godzilla. Godzilla is a nickname applied to Nissan's GTR, and I think that Nissan strongly supports people doing that because the GTR is one of those cars that gets overlooked by anyone but extreme enthusiasts. It's a sort of a Corvette Challenger. It's a dedicated chassis stuffed full of a 565-horsepower engine, lightweight materials, two-seater, fantastic little car that I don't think anyone knows about. And that's kind of a shame because the GTR is a fascinating car. It is a vastly more advanced than, say, something like the Viper. And it could, at $110,000 or so, roughly, well-equipped, it competes with vehicles from Ferrari and Lamborghini that cost vastly more. Mm. And the big news now is that they've tried to make it look like other Nissans, which with what they call their V-Motion grille. If you looked at any new Nissans, you know what I'm talking about. And it looks kind of silly glued onto the front of the GTR.
Yeah.
But it's a heck of a car, and I don't think it gets anywhere near the credit or publicity it deserves.
Now, and it's been around since in America since 2008?
Yeah, it's been around for a long time. It made a big splash when it came out, but it doesn't sell well, and that makes sense. It's a very specific vehicle. It's a two-seater. It's expensive. It's hard to insure. And it's a lot less livable on a day-to-day basis than something like a Corvette.
How fast is it?
Very fast. 0 to 60 happens at about 3.5 seconds, which is crazy fast. I'm not sure what the top speed is, but it's got to be close to 180 or 190 miles an hour.
Well, do you know how many are sold a year? If
I think it's on the order of 1,000 a year.
1,000 a year. So it's a pretty not a huge bunch of people buying these cars.
No. They're not coming in any market, but the people who own them love them.
And so are they trying to push it so that more people will buy it? Is that the idea to change the look of it and to give it the nickname Godzilla? Is this in an effort to try and get people to buy them more?
Yeah, I actually think Nissan is strongly supporting the use of the Godzilla name, and the media is very, very cooperative in this regard. We love giving the car a name because it's such a ridiculous, outrageous car. I don't know how badly Nissan wants to sell a lot of them. They just want this technological showcase to get the light it deserves. You know, General Motors has the Corvette, Chevy has the Corvette, and then Ford's got the new GT that's coming out, and that's going to make such a splash because it's going to be involved in racing. But the Nissan GTR, for whatever reason, just doesn't get the love it deserves.
What's the base price?
About 110 grand.
100. Wow. Okay. 110.
That's expensive.
Yeah, it is. That is. And obviously, this is not a car that you're going to be driving to work in the city.
No, absolutely not. Compared to a Corvette, it's expensive. Compared to a Ferrari 488, which it keeps up with, it's a bargain.
Wow. Okay. But it's a very specific market that they're looking for here.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
Did they get the rights to the name Godzilla?
No, I don't think they did. I don't think they did. It's entirely a nickname. I think they want the press to call it that.
Oh, so they're obviously not using it in any advertising.
No, there's no badge on the car that says Godzilla, nothing like that. So they're sneaking around that one.
Yeah, okay. All right. I would actually think it would be cool if they actually got a badge on the car that said Godzilla.
That would be awesome.
That would be fantastic. By the way, Tom, what are you driving? I like to ask what you've been driving lately.
Oh, great question. I am driving the 2017 Mercedes-Benz C300 Cabriolet.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is this was updated last year. This is Mercedes' compact car, the C-Class, which is available as a sedan, a coupe, and a convertible. I'm driving the convertible. This is sort of the base version of the car, but completely loaded. And it's a black car with a black top, and it features what Mercedes labels its Dezino interior. This is a $3,000 interior that includes tufted leather with hand stitching. It's insane.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very nice little car.
Is it a ragtop?
Yeah.
It is. So it's not metal. It is actually it's a cloth top.
Yeah, you know, the retractable hardtop thing seems to have come and gone.
Okay.
There's a lot of thinking on the part of manufacturers that would make cars seem more safe and more secure, but ultimately it made cars very heavy and complex, and it didn't seem to attract more buyers. So we're back to soft tops.
I read there were also a lot of malfunctions with the hard tops.
They were problematic, yeah. It depended on the car, but General Motors, for example, had done a version of the Pontiac G6 with the retractable hardtop. Nothing but problems.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so a lot of people are backing away from those.
Okay, yeah. Do you like driving convertibles, Tom?
I love. You know, it's funny. I just got into this car today. I haven't driven a convertible in months. I feel very conspicuous at first.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, I don't care how loud the music is. I love driving convertibles.
And you know what? You had great weather today for that.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, perfect weather for that. I mean, we had some rain over the weekend, obviously, but you just got the car yesterday, so there you go.
Yeah, the commute home today was fabulous.
Yeah. How long are you going to drive that?
That will be through Thursday.
Okay. And what did you drive before that?
I just got out of? I got out of the Hyundai Ioniq.
Ioniq?
Yeah, the Ioniq. That's I-O-N-I-Q. And that is Hyundai's new green car platform that will house a pure electric car, a plug-in hybrid, and a regular hybrid. I drove the pure electric version, and it's a very interesting car because it holds an interesting place in terms of range and price. We all know about the new Chevrolet Bolt, which is about $38,000 before the discount, and that goes about 240 miles. This Hyundai will go about 140 miles, but you could do one for as little as $22,000 after the tax rebate.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a really interesting price point. It's very compelling because I think that a lot of maybe married couples that have two cars, they can make do with one car like this if it has, you know, just a little bit more range than electric cars used to.
Yeah. And how often did you have to charge it up?
With 140 miles worth of range, I topped it off every day, but I never needed to. I just wanted to go through the process.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Boy, you go from one car to a completely different kind of ride.
Yeah, the schedule's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us. Consumer Guide Automotive is where you can check him out, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Any and all car questions. We got some lines open. Texts are coming in. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. The news is next. Hi, everybody. Hi. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to talk about weird quirks and habits that humans have. I'll have another celebrity name game battle as well. And it's 2 for Tuesday, so get your requests in. One artist, two song, you program them. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Right now we're talking with our buddy Tom Appel. Joins us every month to talk all things automotive. If you have any car question, 312-981-7200. He tries to help you out. You can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Let us welcome Tom back to the show. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Honda is bringing its Civic hatchback back.
Yes.
Tell us the latest on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting story because there hasn't been a hatchback in a lineup for more than a decade. But the interesting part about it is they're not super committed to volume yet. So this car is actually being built in England and imported to the U.S., which is very strange for a Japanese manufacturer.
Yeah,
but it's a cool-looking little car. I don't know if people have seen the Civic in the last couple of years, but it's become fairly radical-looking, a lot of hard edges and sharp lines, and it's not the bland little car you might associate with the name Civic. And the hatchback is especially especially aggressive looking. I just drove the car actually and really enjoyed it. It's very sporty. The hatchback is useful. And this is a four-door hatchback now. The Civic Line now includes a four-door hatchback, a four-door sedan, and a two-door coupe with a trunk. So it's an interesting lineup. Yeah, cool car, strange little body style that some Americans like, and we'll see if it catches on again. We're in this weird transitional phase where no one can tell what anyone really likes because everyone's moving to crossovers and kind of passing on sedans. But four-door hatchbacks might have a future.
Is the you're talking about what people are enjoying now? Are there trends that repeat over and over again over the years when you're studying what kind of cars are popular?
Yeah, there really is, and I really look at the crossover phase as a return to the station wagon, just in sort of a modified sense. And we see that, like, the Buick Regal, which is going to be new for 2018, is going to come back only as a four-door hatchback and as a station wagon. There won't be a sedan at all, which is really interesting. So I think, we're looking back at the utility of the hatchback, which people used to love, but I don't think that anyone wants to admit they want anything that utilitarian. So it has to be disguised as a crossover or look high end or upscale.
And is the Civic hatchback available now?
Yep, on sale now.
Okay, there you go. Yesterday on the show we were talking about movie cars.
Yeah.
And because the film, Cars 3 opened and it made, like $53 million over the weekend, and we reviewed it and talked about it, and then we segued into this conversation about our favorite TV and movie cars of all time. And I'd love to hear some of your favorites.
Yeah, I've got a couple of here. If I'm going TV,
yeah,
and this is really predictable if anyone knows me, the Jim Rockford Firebird.
That car rules.
Yeah, I have to have that car, specifically the first one, which is the 74.
Mm-hmm.
The great story about that car, too, is it's supposed to be an Esprit, which was just sort of a trim package. If you know, and if you look at the show and you watch the car, it's actually a Formula disguised as an Esprit. So they took off a special hood. So it's actually a really cool car as a kind of a sleeper. So that's totally awesome.
That's a great choice. Great choice.
Yeah. And then a huge fan of the Harold and Maude Hearse.
Yeah, and we talked about this before. Harold and Maude is a great car movie.
Yeah, it really is. There's so many great cars.
There's the El Camino is in that one as well. And the
Yep.
Those are great cars. Some of the ones that came up yesterday for me, the Cuda in the movie Phantasm.
Okay, all right.
It's one of my favorites, and just an amazing muscle car. Obviously, the Mustang and Bullet.
Yes,
is fantastic. But of course, during the conversation, Tom, the name George Barris came up.
Yes,
without question, because the guy designs. We were talking about great, memorable TV and movie cars, and that guy's name. He designed so many great cars.
Yeah, the Monkey Mobile, the Munsters coach.
Yep. The Batmobile.
Yep. Yeah, he was all over the place.
And he, Starsky and Hutch, the Torino.
Oh, that I wasn't aware.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So the Tomato Torino, as they called it. Starsky and Hutch. So that was a lot of fun talking about that yesterday. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got Steve in Galesburg who has a question. Go ahead, Steve.
Me and my dad were talking Saturday afternoon. Is there any American manufacturers that still make a four-door hardtop?
No. What a great question. I don't know if people know what a hardtop is anymore, but a hardtop is a car where the edge of the door pillar, there is no center pillar, so you had just a contiguous area of glass through the car. And if you rolled down the windows, it was just all open. It was a great-looking design. I think it basically disappeared around 1975. But no, there are no four-door hardtops left. I think that's just a safety thing now. You can find a few coupe hardtops if you look really hard, like the Mercedes C and E-Class coupes are hardtops. But no, unfortunately not.
Oh, okay. All right, Steve, great question.
Thanks.
All right, see ya. 312-981-7200. Russ texts us a question, Tom.
Okay.
Says, please ask Tom how I can find out the true market value of my car.
Wow, a couple of great sources, and I usually go to both of them, three of them actually. You can check out Drive Chicago, that's the local dealer association website, and see what that car is selling for retail. You can go to Kelley Blue Book, KBB.com. They do a great job with new, used, and resale values. That's a great one to check. You can also see what the car is going for at I'm forgetting the name of the site now. It'll come to me in just a moment.
TrueCar.com.
Yeah, if you did just those three sites really help you triangulate on a price.
How long has the Kelley Blue Book been around?
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever. Really good source.
Yeah, yeah. The 773 area code says, in general, when purchasing a used car, should you buy the extended warranty the dealership will offer?
No, I always say no. And there's only one exception to that. If you're looking at a certified pre-owned car, and that's where the actual original manufacturer has a program where they're selling the used car with a new car warranty, that's a great project. That's a great way to go on a used car. Other than that, I say never buy the extended warranty.
Is there a reason why you always say that?
Yeah, because they're expensive for what you get. No one sells you insurance that you think you need. And there's often a lot of clauses and things in there where you're paying all sorts of extra money. You're paying like what amounts to co-pays, and then there's caps on a lot of things. It's too much to read. It's too much to study. And generally, the value isn't there.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about this next story here. Only 2 out of 37 vehicle models are passing the headlights test.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. This is released by the IIHS, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety.
Yeah.
It's important to know that this isn't the government. This is an independent organization. It's non-for-profit, but it's paid for by a bunch of for-profit companies, and that's the insurance industry. So they really want us to have safe cars. It's in their best interest. And, of course, it's in everyone's best interest. No one questions their motives. But they tend to come out with standards that are higher than the industry norms. So they've got this headlight standard now, and it suggests that the headlights on most cars, but they're specifically talking about midsize crossovers here, could be better. And it's not just how bright the car is or how well the driver can see, but it also has to do with how much glare the car is giving off and affecting other drivers. So right now they've developed these new standards, and most vehicles don't meet them. People might remember that about 3 or 4 years ago, the IIHS came out with what they called their partial offset crash test, which everything was failing at the time as well. Mm. So this is a fairly common thing where they're going to raise the bar, and manufacturers are probably going to rise to the occasion, and we'll probably see better highlights as a result of this. Better headlights, I'm sorry.
How do they test these things?
That's a good question. I'm not very familiar with the headlight testing process, but one of the things they're looking for is the consistency of the beam, how far down the road you can see, and then how far to the sides you can see. Because often your headlight beam, as you drift to the left or right, starts to fall apart. So there's a lot of things there to watch for.
What about the other, the height of certain vehicles and their headlights and how that affects someone with their rearview mirror?
Yeah, and that's where the glare thing comes in, and it's really important because I think all of us know what it's like to be in front of a pickup truck at a stoplight, and that's a problem. And that's one of the things that they were measuring with this test because crossovers now sit a little bit higher than regular cars.
Yeah, that's true. So 2 out of 37, what you're saying basically is the results here are really they're tougher than standard vehicles would.
Right. All of these vehicles meet government standards for headlight performance. Mm-hmm. These are higher standards now, and these are probably good standards for the auto industry to meet. And I think gradually over time, the industry probably will meet these standards.
Yeah. Okay. So there's some shakeups happening in Detroit's Big Three, and there's shakeups at Ford. What's going on with some of the – there's new CEOs being named and everything?
Yeah, this is a crazy story, and it disturbs me rather deeply. But Mark Fields, who had been the CEO of Ford, replaced Alan Mulally, and it was kind of considered the wonder child there at Ford. He had run Mazda for Ford for a number of years in Japan. He was in charge of product development, and he was very much for autonomous driving. And this seemed to be a guy that was keyed in, was fired rather unceremoniously a couple of weeks ago. And the more we look at the story, the more it seems to be he was fired because Ford's stock price wasn't where it should have been. And it seems that the more we look at this, the auto industry has always suffered from the fact that Wall Street doesn't really like it. General Motors stock and Ford stock especially just never seem to perform as well as it should when the companies are doing well. And in this particular case, Ford never really seemed to see a stock bump from doing so well after the economic disaster. Ford recovered very well. General Motors recovered very well. Actually, both companies never really saw the stock prices rise as their profits did. So they're looking for ways to do this, and they're bringing in people now. They're bringing in this guy who used to run Steelcase because he was able to turn that company around and raise their stock price. And I think it's a little frustrating to see a guy who was really a car guy and really understand the industry get ousted because he wasn't working well with Wall Street, not because he wasn't making good cars.
Mm. And is that a trend that you see that might happen in elsewhere?
Yeah. I don't see that Mary Barra at General Motors is any danger because she's done such a good job over there, especially with profits. But what we are seeing is that companies, Delphi, for example, is a supplier to General Motors, and its stock never does especially well. That company is actually going to split in half and take its unglamorous engine manufacturing side and take that into one company and take another company and turn that into the high-tech company that works on autonomous cars, and it's in a bid to raise stock prices. It's a very crazy thing to do, but it seems necessary because Wall Street and other investors just really don't like old brick-and-mortar, you know, old car-building companies.
And also a lot of jobs were eliminated at Ford this past year.
Yeah, they did some layoffs too. Again, that was to try to ease the bottom line a little bit, and that's a shame.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, hang on, okay, Tom?
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us, and he is with Consumer Guide Automotive. You can check consumerguide.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. If you have any automotive questions at all, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Get your automotive questions in now. Tom's going to be with us for a few more minutes, so call or text right now, 312-981-7200. More car talk coming up right after this break on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. Call now or text now for any and all automotive questions. Tom Appel is our guest. And also text in your requests for Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Get them in now, 312-981-7200. And let's welcome Tom Appel back to the show. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
All righty, then. We got some texts and some phone calls coming in, Tom. And then I want to talk about Farfik Nugent.
Indeed. Bless you.
Thank you very much. Patrick sends in a text that says, I saw a rumor on Facebook that the El Camino was coming back. Is that true? Also, my dad told me that back when they were first on the road, you had to put truck plates on them, not regular license plates. Is that true? I can say this, Tom. My ex-wife has an El Camino.
Oh.
And when she was my wife, she had an El Camino as well. Same one. 74 El Camino, and it had regular plates on it.
Yeah, there was a time where in some states you had to put truck plates on cars that only had two seats. And I never understood the application of that law. So it was sort of true.
I see.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, and her car, that's the 74 El Camino. I love the El Camino. It's one of my favorite cars ever.
Very cool.
And that car was, she's driving around in she lives in Oregon now, so she doesn't even have to put the car away anymore. You know, like in storage. Because when she lived here, it's a 74 El Camino. You're not going to park it on the street in January.
No, it was also hell to drive in snow.
Yeah. But a great car. The El Camino, is it coming back?
No. What was going on there was that the vehicle that forms the Chevrolet police car that's now on the road, and also the Chevrolet SS, was based on the Holden Monaro and the Holden Commodore. Those were coming out of Australia. General Motors has shut down its Australian manufacturing, so there is no basis for that vehicle.
Mm.
And they actually built such a vehicle for Australia. It's extremely cool. Would have been great here, but there was all sorts of safety and crash test things, that hurdles that would have been difficult for them to cross, and volume would have been very low.
Yeah.
So they had to import it, and that's not going to happen now.
I saw pictures of those Australian cars. They looked so damn cool.
Yeah. The Australians always got really cool, weird cars.
Yeah. Jesse says, when I take my car in for a tune-up, do they still do the same things that they did decades ago, or because the vehicles are so different now, do they have to do different things when you get a tune-up?
They do things much less often. There's no longer any sort of chassis lubrication that happens anymore. You still have to do your oil and filter change, but spark plugs are changed less often, wires are changed less often, and there's no carburetor anymore, so there's really no fuel injection system or fuel system stuff to clean. So there's less stuff to do, but basically it's the same stuff.
Basically it's the same, okay.
Yeah.
All right. We have a call here from Nick on WGN. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, Tom, I got a 06 Expedition, and I'm due to get a new one, but I never buy new, so obviously, because the prices are just outrageous. So is there a year that you would or would not recommend, say, after 2011 or 12?
Yeah, I would.
One that's bad or one that's good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would skip ahead to 2014. That was the first year that the EcoBoost V6 replaced the old Triton 5.4 liter V8. It's proven to be very reliable. It's very, not very, that's the wrong word. It's much more fuel efficient, and it's much stronger.
Okay, so that's the 2014 is where you got to start.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, thank you, Nick. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Okay, obnoxious automotive marketing terms. And we're starting with Farfignugan, and you talk about this in a piece that you wrote. Tell everybody about why you wrote this and what are the other three besides Farfignugan.
Yeah, the Farfignugan is the one I'm using because I think it's the most recognizable.
Yeah.
I was actually sort of irritated because Lexus, which makes fine cars, is still using a term L-finesse. It's L-finesse to describe its design language. First of all, I hate the term design language. But and then naming your design language starts to get really irritating.
Yeah.
And if you're like have to write about this stuff, at some point you're just like, really? Really, L-finesse?
Yeah.
My problem here is that Lexus has been using this term now for the better part of 15 years, and Lexus cars look entirely different now. They have these very aggressive spindle grills. There's no commonality to the old design, so there's no reason for them to be using this, but there it is. And of course, Farfignugan, most of us remember from the early 90s.
Yeah, God.
It's a crazy Volkswagen ad campaign that at first was kind of cute and kind of plucky, and then it wore on.
And it went on forever.
It went on forever.
And it was on t-shirts yeah. And hats. It was nuts.
Yeah, I was involved for a moment. I actually had a Farfignugan sticker on my Volkswagen Scirocco. I fully admit this now. But even I was ready to peel that off at some point.
Yeah. All right, how about Skyactiv with Mazda?
Yeah, see, now Skyactiv is very real technology. For people who don't know, Skyactiv is a suite of technologies used by Mazda primarily to make engines more efficient and make their cars lighter. It's the real stuff. But the name is really irritating. Yeah. I guess sky indicates green or clean, but they spell active. First of all, it's one word jammed together, and then they drop the E from active.
Right.
And like, do I have to use this? And they spell it all caps. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I don't care.
And then Earth Dreams from Honda.
It's almost the exact same thing as Skyactiv.
Right.
It's more limited to their powertrain technology. I don't know what Earth Dreams are. I don't like the word dreaming involved in driving, and I hate using it. But the Earth Dreams technology is real. I'm not making fun of Honda. I'm making fun of Honda marketers.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Another piece that you wrote about, the five most forgotten vehicles of 1986. So you perused the year 1986, and you found these five vehicles that nobody will remember?
I'm thinking that very few people remember these.
Okay, so you've got the Audi Coupe GT.
Yeah, which is a great-looking car, but it's a little strange, and I don't know how many people remember that they did this. It was based on Audi's really cool Quattro high-performance coupe, but this was a much less expensive version of that car, but it's kind of funky-looking. I like it, but they hardly sold any of them.
Mm. Now, this I don't recall at all, and it seems insane to me. The Chrysler Limousine?
Yeah.
What? What?
Yeah. Anyone who remembers Lee Iacocca understands how this disaster took place. Oh, the theory goes to people in the industry that Lee Iacocca really wanted to ride around in something other than a minivan, but Chrysler didn't really have anything cool. If you worked at General Motors, there were Cadillacs. If you worked at Ford, there were Lincolns. But if you worked at Chrysler, not so much. So they literally took a K car. This was the Dodge Aries or Plymouth Reliant, and stretched it as far as humanly possible, covered it with vinyl. So it's got this bad Landau roof and called it a limousine. And it is the strangest car with the most bizarre proportions.
That is hilarious. The Isuzu I-Mark?
Yeah, this is actually... This car was probably known better to people as a Chevy. It spent some time as a Chevy Spectrum and as the Geo Spectrum.
Oh, I remember the Spectrum. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Isuzu sold its own version in the U.S., and there you have it. I don't think anyone remembers it.
Was Joe Isuzu the spokesperson for it?
I don't think yet.
Okay.
I don't think yet.
Because I remember he was around 86, 87 when they started using that guy.
So he might have.
Yeah. Isuzu, and then Isuzu Impulse is the last one.
Yeah, actually, this car is gorgeous. I don't know how many people remember this. I just mentioned the Volkswagen Scirocco, and I always compare it to this car. They're about the same size, and the styling is similar, but I actually think this might be the better looking of the two cars. This is a cool car. It had a turbocharged engine, rear-wheel drive, four-wheel disc brakes, but it was really expensive for what it was, and it sold terribly.
Okay.
So I think these are just incredibly obscure.
Yeah. All right. And you can read all about it. You can read the CG Daily Drive stories that Tom has written. The great stuff. ConsumerGuide.com right there. And you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Tom, always a pleasure. And we will talk to you next month.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay, buddy. See, take care. There you go. Tom Appel, everybody. We'll take a break. We got the news coming up next on WGN.